Tonight, the showdown in New Hampshire's 2nd Congressional District. The incumbent, Democrat Annie Custer, Republicans attack her for voting lockstep with President Obama. Her challenger, State Representative Marilinda Garcia. Democrats label her a Tea Party extremist. The NH1 debate starts right now. Good evening. I'm NH1 political director Paul Steinhauser. Welcome to four straight nights of crucial debates in New Hampshire's Senate, gubernatorial, and congressional elections. We start with the race in New Hampshire's 2nd Congressional District. Let's introduce our candidates. Congresswoman Annie Custer was elected to the House of Representatives in 2012, the first woman to represent the district. Custer, a Democrat, was born and raised right here in Concord. Politics runs in her family. Her mother was a state senator, and her father was a mayor of Concord. Custer lives in Hopkinton. Marilinda Garcia serves in the New Hampshire House of Representatives. She was first elected to the state house at the age of 23. Last year, she was named a rising star by the Republican National Committee. Garcia lives in Salem. Now, each candidate will get 1 minute to respond to the questions asked to them. Their opponent will be allowed 30 seconds of rebuttal time. Joining me in asking those questions tonight are NH1's chief political correspondent, Kevin Landrigan, NH1 anchor Kiki Wenzel, and Phil Kincaid, editor of the Telegraph of Nashua. Now, before we start, I'd also like to mention our other sponsors in tonight's debate, our other partners in tonight's debate, New Hampshire Public Radio, the Portsmouth Herald, Foster's Daily Democrat, the Laconia Daily Sun, and the Rudman Center at UNH Law School. Let's start our debate with a topic that's been in the news nonstop the last 2 weeks, and that is the Ebola virus. And the question is, are you satisfied to date with President Obama's President Obama and the administration's actions to prevent the spread of the Ebola virus in the U.S., and do you support calls for a travel ban from Ebola-stricken countries in West Africa? And let's start with Congresswoman Custer.
Thank you, Paul. First, I just want to really thank NH1 for having us all, and we have an historic opportunity tonight. This is the first time that two women have faced off for a race at the top of the ticket, and I think we have a chance to really make this a very respectful session tonight. So thanks for the question on Ebola. The answer is no, I don't think the president has done enough, and I think it was too little too late. I've been actually following this with a front row seat. My cousin is an infectious disease doctor with the CDC, and he just spent a month in Sierra Leone. So I've been getting daily reports. We needed to have been in the Western African countries earlier, and we needed to have more supplies so that we can bring an end to the epidemic at its source. The problem with the idea of the travel ban is that, number one, we don't have any flights from Western Africa to the United States. All of those flights actually go through Europe. And number two, we don't want to do anything that will inhibit the flow of aid and particularly supplies into Western Africa. They need body bags, they need medicine, they need body suits, and all of that would be constricted if we didn't have commercial travel.
Representative.
Sure. Thank you also, NH1 and Paul, for having me, and thank you to the Congresswoman for agreeing to be here tonight. This is the first time we have met, in fact. About Ebola, when I talk to constituents across the district, they're very concerned. They're concerned about their safety in this country. I think, as usual, the president's response has come only after public outcry has become such that it cannot be ignored. And I think a travel ban would be a common sense measure, especially when you think that the abutting countries to those Western African countries have closed off their borders, and certain other small Caribbean countries, for example, have also banned flights from those areas. I will be perfectly willing, though, to listen to what the health experts and epidemiologists have to say about that, but I think it should at least be on the table in terms of a consideration. The bigger problem is you see that it takes a crisis such as this for us to notice that once again one of our federal agencies has been squandering taxpayer resources. During the federal pay freeze a few years ago, the CDC was giving out $25 billion in bonuses to their employees, and now they're asking for more money from the American taxpayers to deal with what they ought have already been dealing with.
Representative, thank you. Congresswoman, do you want to do a short follow-up?
Sure, very short follow-up. I was very concerned when my opponent made comments this week about cutting funds to the CDC. That would be a disastrous policy, and I think we need to make sure they have the resources they need. One of the things we can do is reach out to the private sector with the CDC Foundation, but I definitely think we need to have the funding both to keep Americans safe and to end this epidemic at its source in Western Africa.
A very short follow.
Yes. In fact, I never said that. What I said was what I just said a moment ago, and that is it's a problem when you see that they've been using their resources for things like helmet safety studies, playground safety, and healthy food initiatives, and not for pandemic and potential endemic controls for diseases, infectious diseases, and the pay bonuses are a big issue, too. I think smarter spending is what's in order, not just cutting.
Representative, Congresswoman, thank you. I want to move now to another story that has been in the news here in New Hampshire the last couple of days. And for that, let's go to Kiki.
Thanks a lot, Paul. This is a question for both candidates here tonight. After a weekend of chaos in Keene, we've seen the video and been following this story extensively here at NH1. Should Homeland Security money be used to provide and buy local police military-grade equipment?
Representative, let's begin with you.
Sure. This has been a concern in New Hampshire when it comes to the militarization of police. First of all, I've always supported law enforcement and their ability to be able to keep the citizens of New Hampshire safe, and naturally that goes for the national level as well. But I think we see that, such as with the recent events in Keene, unfortunately there seems to be a tendency toward riotous activity, usually with substances involved on college campuses. So naturally I want the surrounding towns and students that aren't participating to feel safe. So my goal is to be sure that any of our officers feel as though they have the equipment they need, but I wouldn't want it to be a presence in the community so that citizens feel as though the government is being invasive.
Congresswoman.
Yeah, I think the situation with Keene was really surprising to most everybody in New Hampshire. And my biggest concern is the evidence that we're starting to see now of outside groups and agitators coming into town. Obviously, the influence of alcohol and other substances. And, you know, I really think that the Keene police did their best to quell a really riotous situation. In terms of using local funds, though, to buy Homeland Security or the militarization of our police force, typical events in New Hampshire are much better used with local community policing. I want to make sure that the New Hampshire police, either at the local or state level, have the resources that they need without turning our wonderful community here in New Hampshire into a military bunker.
Thank you both. For our next question, I want to go to Phil.
Congresswoman, considering that President Obama has been virtually non-existent on the campaign trail this year because he's viewed more as a liability than a benefit to most Democratic candidates, I'm wondering what your assessment of the president's performance has been to date. And what effect, if any, is his low popularity ratings having on this race?
Well, thank you for the question. I mean, the most obvious answer is that he's not on the ballot. And so I don't worry about his popularity. I worry about my own popularity and how I'm representing the voters of the 2nd Congressional District. I'm focused on jobs and the economy, and I think that's something that we can be doing better. Luckily, our unemployment is starting to drop to 4.3%, but I want to make sure that we're helping to grow the economy and doing everything that we can to make sure that our people here in New Hampshire are prepared for these 21st century jobs. So no, I don't worry about the president's popularity. In terms of the job that he's doing, I think, you know, I have a lot of concerns. Particularly, I'm concerned about his interactions with Congress. And, you know, obviously the Tea Party has had a particular influence in this Congress, and Speaker John Boehner has not been able to schedule very many things to get to the floor because of the Tea Party influence. But I think we can be doing better, and that's my goal, is working across the aisle, bringing people together, and making sure that we do grow the economy and that we can create jobs right here in New Hampshire.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Representative, do you want a rebuttal?
Sure, yes. I would say it is a large concern. There's no question that the president has not been a successful leader, and our country is suffering. And when I hear Representative Custer speak the way she does, claiming to be bipartisan and claiming that she's in no way aligned or aiding and abetting the president, all I can think is that she chaired his campaign committee or parts of it while in New Hampshire. And as recently as a few months ago, she still claims to be one of his strongest supporters in Congress. More worrisome, though, is that when I talk to constituents, because I've been traveling around the district for almost a year now, they say that when they approach her with a concern about a new regulation that's passed or something they're having trouble dealing with or a new law that they're concerned what effect it or an unintended consequence it will come, she'll say to them, well, I hear your concern, but I know this is important to the Obama administration, so I'm going to have to support it. And that isn't leadership. And when we have the economic situation, the situation we're facing when it comes to global stability right now, I think we need better than that in Congress.
Thank you, Representative. Do you want a short,
Happy to address it. Yes, a very specific example of overburdensome regulations that I did take on the administration and had a very successful result, and that's the FDA rules that came out on food safety modernization. I worked with the farmers here. In fact, I'm very proud of bringing the FDA to New Hampshire. We had a hearing in Hanover last year with 200 farmers, and I'm very pleased to report that we got a positive result, that the rules were changed, and we are working for our constituents literally every single day. We get over 1,000 inquiries every week and respond to all of them.
Let's move from the president to a politician right here in New Hampshire, and for that, I want to go to my colleague, Kevin.
Thank you, Paul. My question's for Representative Garcia. Former House Speaker Bill O'Brien is a big supporter of yours and encouraged you to run after he decided not to. Can you name a major issue while he was Speaker in which you opposed his leadership point of view?
Thank you, Kevin. In fact, he's one of a broad spectrum of Republicans that supported me from the get-go, and in fact, he wasn't the first one. But when it came to his leadership style, in fact, he never approached us and said, this is what I want, my way or the highway, which is the way I understand our Senate works, and in many cases, our president, who refuses to work with Congress whatsoever. So when it comes to his leadership in the House, all I know is that we had an $800 million deficit, and I was really proud of us working together, Republicans and Democrats, with my colleague on the Finance Committee, to pull ourselves out of that historic budget deficit. We did that. We didn't raise taxes, and so I appreciate his work on that.
The Bill O'Brien time in office from 2010 to 2012 was just devastating to the state's economy, and I don't think that my opponent can name a single issue that she disagreed with Bill O'Brien. She voted to cut our university system budget by 50%. She voted to cut veterans benefits. She voted across the board cuts that were devastating to the state. And frankly, she voted to increase government interference in people's personal lives, trying to repeal our marriage equality legislation, voting, in fact, I think she introduced the bill to completely abolish abortion under all circumstances, no exemptions for rape or incest or even the life of the mother. So I really want to say that this is an important issue, and I'm glad that Kevin brought it up. Thanks.
Yeah, I think you want to respond, Representative?
Sure, yeah. I think the Congresswoman has merely been parroting what are her false ads that she's running hundreds of thousands of dollars on TV. In fact, I introduced no such legislation. And when I spoke to my fiance and brother who are doctors and saw that ad, they said, surely the Congresswoman understands that doctors can always are authorized to make the decision to save the life of a mother. And so therefore that ad is false. And I said, I think she does know that.
Well, that's not the legislation. Actually, your speech on the floor, and you spoke very eloquently, your insistence that there be no exemptions and that the physician be criminalized, that's criminal behavior, if the physician makes a judgment about whether to save the life of the mother. And frankly, I've been an adoption attorney for 25 years. I know that there's a broad range of opinion on this issue, both religious and personal. I've walked the walk. But I think that Ms. Garcia's views on this are very extreme, outside the norm for New Hampshire and even New Hampshire Republicans.
We get a short response,
Thank
and then
you.
We have to move on.
It's pretty simple. It's just patently false. So the idea that a congresswoman would assert something that is patently false is a real concern
just,
and really damages
quoting
your credibility.
Your speech on the floor
that
of the
is
New
incorrect.
Hampshire House.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Not only are we taking questions from ourselves here, but also from our viewers from across the state of New Hampshire. And I want to read one of those right now. And this is from a Matthew Murray. And he asked, this is to Representative Garcia, I would like to know if she has health care before the campaign. And if so, how was she paying for it since she made $6,000 last year? Was she covered by Medicaid? What plan does she now have now? And where did she buy it? Representative?
Sure. I believe that health care is something that is very private to individuals. So when I was asked about this before, I was slightly taken aback. But then I told the news sources that, in fact, I have catastrophic coverage because that meets my needs. So one of my concerns is that when our congresswoman said actually she would have voted for Obamacare, that is raiding Medicare, cutting it from seniors by $716 billion, that 16,000 of them are going to be kicked off their Medicare Advantage plans. When I talk to women, single women, moms, seeing that their premiums on average are going to be raised between $2,000 and $4,000, that's called government interference in health care, and that is what I do not support. On the state level, I've supported reforms and innovations that actually allow for more consumer choice so that health care decisions can more closely meet the needs of New Hampshire citizens and not be mandated from Washington.
Thank you, Representative. Congresswoman, I see you want to respond.
Sure. I don't think we got an answer on her coverage before she ran. But in any event, I'm happy to move on to the discussion about health care here in New Hampshire. Look, I would be the first to say that the rollout had serious problems, certainly with the computer, and that the first year in New Hampshire was an issue where we only had one health care insurer. But I think what Ms. Garcia is missing the point completely, we now have 70,000 people in New Hampshire that are going to have coverage, that they have coverage. We're going to have 5 different insurers and 50 different plans to choose from. I was raised Republican, and my Republican roots are that that type of competition is going to help to bring down costs, increase access, and give consumers the choice. And that's where we want to be. We want to be in a consumer choice. So I voted for every opportunity that I had to fix Obamacare, but I have to say it's completely irresponsible for my opponent to talk about repeal. We took 53 votes in Congress to repeal, and it's not going to happen.
Representative, 10 seconds to respond if you want.
I like to not make promises I can't keep, so I've always said I would work to dismantle the most egregious parts. And despite the facts or thoughts that the Congresswoman's offering about some of its positive aspects, I wonder how that feels to the 22,000 people that were kicked off their plans and the women who had cancer treatment and can no longer visit their doctors thanks to Obamacare.
Well,
not
the
to
real
mention,
problem was not, the people who lost
me,
coverage.
Excuse me, Mrs. Custer. Thank you very much. Never mind the fact that of our 26 hospitals, 10 of them were out of network, 7 of those in the district. That was very disruptive and life-threatening to people that know their doctors, that are close to their hospitals and no longer had access.
Well, that's my point. We now have 3 different carriers that are going to provide coverage of all the hospitals. And with regard to women, the problem before, and Ms. Garcia must know this, is that women paid rates that were higher than men, and they were kicked off their coverage, having paid their premiums for years when they did get cancer. So I don't think that we want to go back to a time when women had to pay more, when we had the donut hole for seniors, and when they lost coverage for getting sick or pre-existing conditions.
Congresswoman, Representative, thank you. We're going to leave that discussion right there for now. From immigration to ISIS, from taxes to town halls, we've got a lot more ahead in our NH1 second congressional debate. We'll be back after a very short break. This is the first televised debate for Congresswoman Custer since the post-2012 election controversy over having paid her property taxes late. Now, your challenger is highlighting that episode in one of her campaign commercials. Let's take a listen.
Life's tough when you're a lobbyist turned congresswoman Ann Custer. Custer has been delinquent on more than $40,000 in property taxes, including on her vacation home. What's her excuse?
Life is expensive.
But when she stopped paying her taxes on time, Custer was making nearly $200,000 as a lobbyist for big drug companies and only paid when she got caught. Ann Custer likes spending your taxes in Washington, but doesn't like paying hers. She's out of touch with New Hampshire.
Congresswoman, is your opponent's criticism in that ad fair? And if you had trouble following property tax laws, then how can you expect average New Hampshire citizens to follow them as well?
Well, thank you for bringing it up, because no, it's a personal attack that's not accurate, but I'm sure Ms. Garcia knows perfectly well our taxes are paid in full. We made a mistake and we apologized. And what's important is that I've been focused every single day on doing the job of representing the 2nd Congressional District. And I was actually very surprised when I saw that ad, because Ms. Garcia herself has had a real record of being missing in action for her constituents. Her attendance record in the New Hampshire House, which I have to point out is quite a bit more convenient than my weekly shuttle down to Washington, she's missed 30% of her votes in her tenure in the State House. And in 2010, I believe it was, she missed almost two-thirds of the vote, 60%. So I really can't imagine her criticism. But again, you know, I have to say what's disappointing is more these personal attacks, trying to find the worst possible photograph, you know, the disrespect. And I think, frankly, after the week that I had last week, I can certainly say the voters are tired of that level of disrespect. They're tired of the personal attacks. And I think really what they want is for us to be discussing issues that are of importance to them.
Representative, do you want to respond?
Sure. Yeah, the first point is that that's actually not my ad. Mine is much better than that. And it doesn't have any unflattering photos of you, Congresswoman, I promise. The issue here is that, first of all, I have a wonderful attendance record, at least average or above average, in the New Hampshire volunteer legislature, by the way. And the Congresswoman would know that because she was a lobbyist there until 2009. And the issue with this ad is that while she was earning four times the average income of New Hampshire citizens, she in fact didn't pay her property taxes on her, she has two homes, three times in a row, I believe. So it's not to be petty and it's not to be personal. Honestly, I wouldn't care, except people came up to me and said, you know what, why is she raising my taxes when she doesn't even pay her own? She earns four times the New Hampshire average income, so why is she voting to raise my taxes all the time but doesn't pay her own? That's the point of the ad.
Quick
and
response.
I think, yeah, I just think the bigger question that people have out on the street is, why is Ms. Garcia taking a paycheck to be paid to be the candidate? You know, the Koch brothers, and she acknowledged it's an outside ad, the Koch brothers have spent millions of dollars in personal attacks against me. Again, as I say, taking the worst possible pictures. And now we learn this week that Ms. Garcia is actually being paid to be the candidate. I mean, the question for New Hampshire voters, follow the money. You know, they're savvy businessmen, and they know what they're getting. They're getting a reliable, extreme Tea Party vote.
I think you got a very short rebuttal.
Yeah, the Congresswoman's really good at labels and name calling. She's brought up this Koch brother thing so many times that I actually had my staff check. The Koch brothers have contributed approximately 1.5% of all of the money I've raised for this campaign. In the meantime, sure, I'm a teacher. I haven't been working, obviously, during the summer and then had to leave my job to campaign full time, because New Hampshire citizens like to hear from and see and have communication with those who seek to represent them. They're concerned that Representative Custer doesn't host town halls, never has, and they never see her. So her net worth is $2 million. She can afford to sit there and, you know, not have a salary and run attack ads worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. I cannot.
If I could address the issue about my interactions with the constituents, because I'm really glad to bring up my schedule. We have endless events. I am You know, it's funny to hear Ms. Garcia talk about traveling the district, because obviously I've been traveling the district not only for 4 years on the campaign trail, but then 2 years as a member of Congress. We hold our events in town halls, but also in Congress at Your Company visits that we've had dozens of. We do roundtables with seniors and students and veterans. And so we're constantly communicating with constituents. And again, I think it's just a red herring. Thanks.
I want to move to another ad now, because this is from the Congresswoman, and it's directed towards the representative. And the ad portrays you as a Tea Party conservative. So let's take a listen to this one.
I'm Annie Custer, and I approve this message.
From the state of New Hampshire, Marilyn Garcia.
Ted Cruz, architect of the government shutdown, backing Marilinda Garcia. Because Garcia stuck to the Tea Party playbook. She'd abolished the Department of Education, eliminating federal student loans. Worse, Garcia'd ban abortion and even opposed the Violence Against Women Act. Marilinda Garcia, a Tea Party agenda that's just too extreme.
Representative, where do you stand on those issues?
Sure, absolutely. Again, I don't know if this is just a DC thing that you do when you're trying to be reelected. I didn't hear her talk about a single issue that matters to voters. Instead, she used labels. She used extremist, Tea Party, everything that tries to scare voters away. I never said I was going to abolish the Department of Education. And again, I never tried to ban all abortions so that doctors will be dragged off to prison. Those are blatantly false. They've been shown to be. But the Congresswoman not only stands by them, but she actually continues to reassert them even right here tonight on this stage. So again, I don't know if that's something you do once you're a DC politician and you're out of touch with your voters here in the state, or if that's just her own scruples, but I think it lacks compunction and conscience.
Congresswoman, a short response?
Sure. I am just shocked to hear Ms. Garcia say that the ad doesn't cover a single issue that anyone cares about. All across this district, middle-class families care about sending their children to college. It's the number one issue that I talk with, not just for families, but frankly for the business community. And that's been my focus, jobs and economic opportunity, and making sure that New Hampshire families do have that economic opportunity. And when the representative takes the position that we should completely abolish the Department of Education, that would mean no Pell Grants and it would be no subsidized student loans. And I can't imagine traveling across the state as I do. I cannot imagine the impact on our economy and on people's lives without subsidized federal student loans.
Representative, a very short response.
Sure. It may be a DC thing, but when someone advocates for reforms that in fact help children and help educational opportunities be provided, that's what I'm all about. She may be about protecting departments, these iron box, inflexible agencies and departments. I'm not. I'm about reform. I'm about children when it comes to education. And that is the purpose of the Department of Education. So if she, anytime anybody criticizes a department in D.C. that, again, has been shown to lack accountability and lack outcomes and just says, oh, you know, it's slash and burn tactics and scare tactics, well, she can run a campaign like that, but I'm not willing to.
Thank
and
you both.
And it's not criticism, really. When you talk about abolishing, you're not going to have any student loans left.
Thank you both. For our next question, I want to go to Phil.
Representative Garcia, in the 2014 legislative session, you voted against SB 390. It was a bill prohibiting discrimination against employees who are victims of domestic violence. It cleared the House and the Senate by wide margins and was signed into law by Governor Maggie Hassan. Could you explain your objections to that bill?
I don't remember the specifics of that bill, but what I did support was stiffer penalties for victims of domestic violence, as well as opposing early release for sex offenders. So I would imagine I would be happy to look back into that bill and see what it was. But as usual, it seems to me that a lot of times the titles of bills and then the actual details of them have unintended consequences, or perhaps there's a redundancy that's best met elsewhere. So I'll be happy to get back to you on that.
Congresswoman, is there any response?
No, I just think it's a common refrain that I've heard from a number of people on the campaign about This comment, I'll get back to you on that. That was what was heard by the Nashua Chamber of Commerce as well. But yeah, let me just tell you, I've been an advocate for women, frankly, my entire career. Again, going back to being an adoption attorney for 25 years, working with women facing unplanned pregnancies, oftentimes victims of rape or a sexual assault. And I cannot imagine Ms. Garcia has taken a position in opposition to the Violence Against Women Act. This is a federal law that has been on the books for 20 years. And it provides support to victims and to our police departments and to our prosecutors and to our victim advocates to make sure that families that experience this type of violence have the support that they need. I find it unconscionable.
Representative, I'll give you a very short answer here.
Sure. Just first of all, it's an absurdity to even insinuate that I in some way support violence against women. Being a woman, having friends and family members that have suffered psychological, physical, and emotional abuse. The point is, again, it's called the Violence Against Women Act, but there are portions of it that address men, that address prisoners, and again, a lot of the programs in there are covered by the Department of Justice and Department of Health and Human Services. So I'm about smart spending and smart non-redundant legislation. So just because there's a catchy title that the Congresswoman might throw out there so that she can then beat an opponent's head over it during a campaign doesn't make it a great law.
Okay. Thank you both for your answers. I want to move now to Kevin for the next question.
Thank you. This is for Congresswoman Custer. You've had a number of business forums and meetings, but you've been criticized for not hosting town hall meetings. And last week, you referred to that they could be a troublesome format and didn't add much to the debate. Doesn't New Hampshire have a tradition of having freewheeling town hall meetings with the people who want to be president? And how can you stay accessible to the public if you refuse to take unscripted questions from them?
Oh, no, to the contrary, Kevin. It's not that I don't take unscripted questions. In fact, we have a tradition of that. I absolutely embrace that tradition. And I go to where the constituents are, and we have these open forums in Congress at your company visits. We've done dozens and dozens of them and have a very robust back and forth. What I'm talking about are these events that are entirely scripted, and frankly, they play to the cameras. And with all due respect, that's precisely what my opponent, Ms. Garcia, has been doing. She, to great fanfare, announced that she was going to have these town halls when really what they are, they're not only sponsored by the local Republican committee in Littleton and in Hanover, but the people, the participants are screened and the questions are screened. And so what I like to do is keep an open forum, make sure that everybody can participate. We don't screen the questions, we don't screen the people. We go to where the people are. And that's, I think, the debate. And frankly, it's a wonderful tradition in New Hampshire. But let me just say, the way Ms. Garcia is doing it, she's certainly no John McCain.
Representative, I can see you want to
respond. Sure, yeah. Basically, the only people we've screened out of those town halls are the people she sends to videotape me. So that's kind of amusing in and of itself. Otherwise, we screen the questions because they're topical. So we want to take healthcare questions at the healthcare town hall, foreign policy questions at the foreign policy town hall. But more importantly, I'm having them. And she doesn't like the fact that I like to be thoughtful and say I'll get back to you on certain questions that I don't feel I'm perhaps properly informed about. But at least I take a question to begin with. And that's the big difference between Congresswoman Custer and myself. And that's what New Hampshire citizens are telling me they feel they are lacking in a congresswoman right now.
Well, that's why we're out there, honestly, literally every day right now, 30 diners in 30 days, talking with people about the issues that they care about, talking to small business owners about the economy and what we could do to help them to grow jobs. And just today, down in Nashua, had a wonderful event about rail, and that's what I was referring to when Ms. Garcia at the Nashua Chamber of Commerce refused to answer a question about rail, said that she was not aware of it, when in fact she'd taken a vote to abolish the committee that was studying rail. So I think it's a question of integrity, really, and I think it's a question of preparedness and whether she's really ready to take this on.
Congressman, thank you. Very, very
sure.
Short reply.
Yeah, she had a obviously politically motivated press conference just to attack me on that issue. The fact is, This has been an ongoing consideration, and I voted that there be a cost-benefit analysis, because as I've seen in the legislature, is any time we're considering a proposal that involves Massachusetts, we have to be sure that we're being good stewards of the taxpayer resources. So if this is a $200 million project that involves Massachusetts, I want to know if it's feasible, if the state legislature and the governor and those that did the study agree that it does offer benefits, and that Massachusetts will be holding up their end of the bargain. I don't promise to do things or pass things just to score points, political points.
Thank you
both. Just think it would have been more integrity to tell the Nashua Chamber what her vote had been.
Congresswoman, Representative, thank you. I want to move now to an issue that has been in the news, not just in the last couple of days, but for the last couple of years, and it's been a big issue in the last couple of months, making headlines across the country, and that is what to do about the problem of illegal immigration. And for that, I want to go to Kiki.
Paul, thank you so much. I have a question tonight again for both candidates. We have 24 undocumented children from Central America who recently entered our state school system after coming across the border illegally this past summer. And we have learned that local school systems don't know who these children are because they cannot ask about immigration status because of a law. Should New Hampshire schools have access to that information? And if so, should they be sharing it with the public, for example, parents of students?
Representative, let's start with you.
Sure. I think it's important that the public have transparency. This rights of American citizens ought to be first and foremost. And, you know, we've seen many children, a few actually, pass away from the enterovirus. So that's really unfortunate. Now with the issue with the potential threat of Ebola, I think we have to be sure that when it comes to our most wonderful resource, and that is, of course, our future, our children, we have to be sure that they're in an environment where children are properly vaccinated and their health isn't at risk. So many parents have expressed that concern to me, and I really can understand that. So certainly we ought not to be disrespecting these children, but we absolutely should have parents be able to know if their children that are American citizens might be at risk in some way.
Congresswoman.
I certainly agree that we need to know what their vaccine status is. I think the issue is one of compassion and concern for these young children through no fault of their own end up here in New Hampshire. Obviously, they weren't the ones that were instigating the trip. They're so young. But really on immigration, I support the bipartisan immigration bill that Senator Kelly Ayotte has signed on to with Senator Jean Chihane. And I think we need to have a comprehensive solution with a path to citizenship, but make sure that people get in line and that we have, we're a nation of laws. And I've really been surprised. I tried to follow the back and forth in the primary. I didn't know exactly where Ms. Garcia ended up, but we're a nation of laws and we need to make sure to protect our local citizens and have a resolution about the people that are here across the borders.
Well, my next question was going to be about that bipartisan Senate bill. Since you've already brought it up, let me ask you, Republicans in the House describe that bill as leading to amnesty. Do you agree with their charge? I'm assuming the answer is no, but tell me why it is not amnesty.
Well, because this is a bipartisan bill that has steps that have to be taken. Again, we're a nation of laws and regular steps that need to be taken to make sure that people pay up fines or back taxes, that they're citizen, that they have all the qualifications of citizenship before they become citizens. But what's really the problem, and frankly, the Tea Party is getting in the way of resolving that, and many Republicans have said this, including some of the presidential candidates planning to come to New Hampshire, is that when they refuse to bring this bill to the floor of the House, we end up with, I think, 11 million people living in the shadows. They don't have regular contact or legal status, and I'm very concerned about that. I think that puts the rest of us at risk and that we need to have these issues resolved.
Representative, let me ask you then, was it wrong for House Republicans not to allow a vote on the bipartisan bill?
Well, I think that happened at a certain moment in time, but since then we've seen that 60,000 children and young adults in buses have come over the border. We've seen ISIS arise. Again, the president called that a junior varsity team, but we now know that they're one of the most serious terrorist threats that we've ever encountered. Too extreme for Al-Qaeda. They could easily come across our border. And now we have the potential of a pandemic or bioterror with Ebola. So right now, I'm willing to engage in the discussion on immigration reform. It needs to be done. But all of that is meaningless if we don't first secure our border. So border security is national security, and any other reform would be meaningless if we don't first secure our border.
And border security is a significant part of that bill, and everyone agreed to it. As I say, Senator Kelly Ayotte, the Republicans came to the table, but in the House, where it's the Tea Party that is calling the shots, it's a very extreme position. They won't bring the bill to the floor, and as a result, 11 million illegal people just in our midst and no resolution, and that's the issue that we need to be concerned about is, you know, how do we how can we continue as a nation of laws when we don't know who these people are?
Representative, Congresswoman, thank you both very much. ISIS, energy, minimum wage, just some of the topics ahead. We have a lot more in our debate. Stay with us. Welcome back. Another top issue the last couple of weeks, the last couple of months, I should say, is ISIS and the situation in the Middle East. And for that, I want to go to Kiki for a question.
Thanks, Paul. This is a question for Congresswoman Custer tonight. Congresswoman, you have been very critical of our country's involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan. Looking back with the way events are unfolding right now with ISIS in that region of the world, was it unwise for President Obama not to push harder to maintain a longer U.S. military presence in the Middle East?
Well, Kiki, thanks for the question, and I appreciate the opportunity to address it. First of all, I think the first war in Iraq, we all know now, was a mistake. There were no weapons of mass destruction. And, you know, I'm very proud to serve on the Veterans Affairs Committee in the House and to work with veterans all over the district. I've been to the deployment ceremonies for vets that have been leaving for Iraq and Afghanistan, and I've worked with their families. My own father was a POW of World War II, and I know that they're coming back with PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and some real trauma. So that my goal was to bring the troops home. First of all, look at what it's done to the deficits, the two wars. And second of all, I'm pro-veteran, anti-war. I want to make sure we take care of our veterans, and I'm proud that we've done the job that we've done with the Veterans Reform Bill on health care and that we're opening new clinics in Berlin and Colebrook. In terms of this next situation, what I'm very concerned about, it's my opponent's position of wanting boots back on the ground. I voted for the airstrikes because I want to give Secretary Kerry and the President time to bring our allies in and to make sure that we don't go it alone, that we're not doing boots on the ground, and that we are bringing our allies, both Arabs in the region and our Western allies, to the fore to take the fight to ISIS.
Thank you. A short reply, Representative?
Sure. The Congresswoman either has a penchant or a knack or a will just to distort my position all the time. The fact is, I never said that I want boots on the ground. I have a brother in the Air Force. I have an uncle in the Marines and the Air National Guard. They are all serving and have been. The last thing we want to do is see loss of American lives, if not necessary. What I do disagree with and what she's unwilling to criticize the president in is doing things for political purposes. I think it's a huge mistake that just because you know public sentiment is against troops or boots on the ground, that you telegraph to the world how far we're not willing to go to protect the interests and national security of our country. The fact is, ISIS came about because we withdraw without having a status of forces agreement, and the president did that, again, announcing the timeline to our enemies for political purposes. Now we have this disaster unfolding on our hands, a lot of instability, and our national security is at risk. So I say keep all the options on the table. Do the humanitarian aid drop. I'm glad we did. Do the airstrikes. I'm glad we did. But when our Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Dempsey says ISIS has tactical momentum, that's a euphemism for saying the U.S. is losing and ISIS is winning, so we need to be sure that we have all options on the table.
Very short reply, Congressman.
Again, when she says all options on the table, she seems intent on having American troops. I believe that we can bring our allies in, that we can work in a coalition, and that, yes, take the fight to ISIS. I was there at the Jim Foley funeral this weekend. I absolutely think they're barbaric, and we need to stop them in their tracks.
Thank you both. Let's move from boots on the ground to pocketbook issues back here, and for that, I want to go to Phil.
Thank you, Paul. This question is for Representative Garcia. You are listed as being absent without excuse when the House approved legislation establishing a state minimum wage. Could you explain your position on the economic effects of a minimum wage? And if you were elected to Congress, would you support raising the federal minimum wage?
Sure. Yes, I was absent that day probably because, as I said, it's a volunteer legislature. I always do my best to be there, but I was working other jobs at the time, as so many of my colleagues do. I didn't support that because we do have a federal minimum wage, and I have opposed raising the federal minimum wage for this reason. And the Congresswoman would know this as well if she were out there in the district talking to business owners. Every business owner I talk to says, if we raise the minimum wage, I will have to lay people off. And in fact, economists and studies have shown that if the federal minimum wage is waived, there will be millions of job losses across the country. I can't do that to the American people right now. People are struggling just to find jobs. Millennials are facing a 40% unemployment rate. We have a big problem, and causing more job losses is not a fix.
Go ahead, Congresswoman.
Again, Representative Garcia missing an action in the State House. As I said, she missed 30% of her votes and 56% in 2010, not for working, but for getting a degree, I understand, down at Harvard. But really, what this issue is about, and again, I think if she had more life experience, she'd understand. People are working very, very hard. It's very difficult for middle-class families to juggle raising their children, saving to own a home, paying the rent, perhaps saving for college or taking care of seniors. And what I'm concerned about is that under Bill O'Brien, they abolished the minimum wage here in New Hampshire. What amount is sufficient if you don't support the minimum wage? Is $2 an hour enough? Is $1 an hour enough? So I'm out there working every single day for hardworking families that are trying to make ends meet.
Thank you. Representative, a short response?
Sure. I'll just have to say, I'm not sure if the Congresswoman doesn't like my lifestyle choices in terms of my volunteer activities and humanitarian projects and teaching, or if she just has a problem with the size of my paycheck. But it would be nice if she could stick with the issues.
Thank you both. Temperatures are dropping. We're going from fall now, and winter is close by. So I want to go to Kevin for another question.
Yes, this question is for Representative Garcia. To help ease energy prices and reduce the dependence on foreign oil, you're a strong proponent of the Keystone Pipeline that you've described as long overdue. There's another controversial gas pipeline project much closer to home. What's your position on the proposal from Kinder Morgan and its Tennessee Gas Pipeline subsidiary to construct a national gas pipeline throughout central New Hampshire?
Thank you for the question, Kevin. Yes, I was speaking with some constituents, or hopefully soon to be constituents, in Hollis, New Hampshire, about this very problem. They've taken action. They're very concerned, and similar with the Northern Pass, which also involves energy, which is badly needed in this area, seeing as our taxes are always going up, exploration is being obstructed by the president, and the Congresswoman has failed to take action on that. The Keystone Pipeline could immediately move us closer to energy independence. It could create jobs. It could bring down prices. But in fact, she, again, is failing to show leadership on that issue. So any other energy proposition that affects New Hampshire in some way, I really think we have to be sure we're respecting private property rights and that the people of New Hampshire know they have a voice for them in Washington. So I would be in close contact with the local and state government here to make sure that we're respecting their private property and concerns.
Congresswoman.
And again, I'm not sure we got an answer, but I have been involved with the delegation on Kinder Morgan representing the people of Hollis and their concerns about the siting of that. You know, New Hampshire has a very long tradition of local control, and I want to make sure, as I have on the Northern Pass, make sure that the local citizens are heard from. These are significant issues. When you have tourism being one of our top priorities for our economy, when you have 650,000 people come in for Columbus Day, we need to make sure that we maintain the pristine beauty of our precious state and that we grow jobs. And I think that's the balance. I want to be sure to be growing jobs, making sure that energy is available for families, keeping the prices low. Obviously now the gasoline prices are dropping, but let's make sure that we have the heating oil and the and this is something that I was really pleased to work on, is bioenergy on the Agriculture Committee, making sure that we have lots of alternatives. So I'm all of the above on energy. Thank you.
Thank you both. Before we end tonight, let's have a little lighter moment and maybe ask some things about you guys that our viewers would like to know. So first off, and I'll start with you, Congressman, what was the last book you read?
Actually, I'm reading it right now, and it's Sonia Sotomayor on the Supreme Court. It's an autobiography, and it's really a terrific book about the American dream and all of us coming from families of immigrants and what can be accomplished through education and hard work. And frankly, it's why I'm so committed to education and making sure that every child in New Hampshire has the opportunity.
Representative Garcia, the same question for you. The last book you've read or the one you were currently reading?
Sure. The last book I read was The Great Influenza. It was about what happened in our country in the early 1900s and kind of the history and development of epidemiology here in the country, mostly at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. So that really struck me, the way the U.S. responded to that, how science and technology has developed to help that. And now that this Ebola threat has arisen, it's a newly interesting to me, I should say.
Thank you both. No rebuttals on these, by the way. None needed.
No worries.
Let's not do that.
None needed.
Okay, next question, and I'll start with you, Representative. A magazine that you subscribe to?
New Hampshire Business Weekly.
Good answer.
I was going to say New Hampshire Business Review.
Okay, two very good answers, and you kept it right here in the Granite State.
Mm-hmm.
Smart. What car do you drive, Congresswoman?
A very, very old one. It's a station wagon. In the last campaign, I proudly used to say it had 214,000 miles. Now it has 250,000 miles and still getting us around the state.
250,000.
As I said, frugal Yankee.
And it's still insured. That's pretty impressive. Representative, the same question to you.
Sure. I have a Nissan Rogue, and my requirement for that was that it was a big enough small car that I could fit my harp in the back. So I'm always the one showing up at the car dealer literally with my harp to see if the seats will fall flat and I can fit the instrument in.
That's a very important priority for you. We know you're an accomplished musician, so thank you both very much. I want to thank you both for joining us tonight. I think we learned a lot about both of you, where you stand on the issues. And tomorrow night, NH1 will host the debate between Carol Shea Porter and Frank Itta in the 1st Congressional District. That's at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Wednesday night, of course, on October 22nd, the gubernatorial debate with Democrat Maggie Hassett and the Republican challenger Walt Havenstein. And on Thursday, October 23rd, the U.S. Senate candidates, Democratic incumbent Jeanne Shaheen and her Republican challenger Scott Brown. We're going to team up with our friends at CNN for that debate. Of course, all these debates will be live on WBIN from the studios right here at NH1 in Concord. And they'll be simulcast, as always, as tonight's was, on New Hampshire Public Radio from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. And we want to hear from you. If you have questions for the candidates in these upcoming debates, please send them to us via Facebook or shoot us an email, news@nh1.com. Again, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Stay safe.